Thank you, brothers, for sharing your time. You know, on a cool fall morning, it would be a lot easier for you to get up and just kind of get in there and drink extra coffee and watch your TV programs and get your thing all set for the games that are coming on today. But here you are. And I'll tell you, I couldn't be more blessed than what Cliff did last night and Scott did earlier. They were home runs. You just can't put it any other way. I was blessed. I saw that when he referenced that Deuteronomy passage, I never really paid attention to that passage. That was powerful, extremely good. So be encouraged. I tried to feign an illness to see if he would take my place for the second session. Didn't work. I don't know what Jerry Clower would say about that, but I'm sure it would be funny. You know, this past Father's Day, I got a text from my oldest son, Bill. I don't think I'll ever forget it. And he said, "Dad, I want to tell you some reasons I appreciate you." And one of the things he said in it was, "You taught me to work." And since I'm talking on work today, that kind of came up to my mind that here he is 54 years old. I know I don't look old enough to be his father. You know, I know that. But to get that, and for him to put it in the text, I was kind of a bit overwhelmed. He said several other things that I won't bother to mention. But what a privilege it is. Started a long time ago working, long time ago. Grew up working for a city kid. Growing up working, started newspapers. And then I remember by junior high, I was going down and working in the supermarket after church, working the department store, pumped gas, all kinds of things. I've been working all my life. I mean, I've been working for 60 years, and I'm still going. Thank the Lord for the strength He's given me. This matter of the godly employee, the words of Kent Hughes, and some of you probably have this book, Disciplines of a Godly Man. It is a very fine book. He's such a challenging writer. But he said, "A dark cloud of dissatisfaction blankets today's workforce. Only 1/10 of American workers say they are satisfied with their jobs. For the overwhelming majority, work is dull and meaningless. This pervasive discontent has spawned the paradoxical problems of laziness on the one hand, and overwork on the other." There was a book printed entitled "The Day America Told the Truth" by Patterson and Kim. And they tell us that only 1 in 4 employees gives his best on the job. Right there, that ought to be like a billboard and say, "Christian men, look at the opportunity we've got. If we'll be honest, we'll go early, we'll stay late. We don't complain. We honor those in authority over us. We try to do our job to the best that we can do." I remember I was between pastorates down here in Raleigh. We came out of Canada, and I knew after 8 years in Canada, I just felt it was crucial to come back to the States at my stage of life. I was in my late 40s. I figured I better do that. I didn't want my kids having to go through all the transitions that occur when you live in another country. And I just thought, this is the time. And I left a church that I loved. I couldn't even name a problem in that church. It was just a joyous, wonderful fellowship. But I knew it was time. And we came back down to Raleigh. And I worked in financial business. And I did that for about 6 months, just until I could get situated in another pastorate. And I went in first every day, and I was always the last one to leave. One day, the man that owned the financial business, Lincoln Financial, he came in and started getting on me. And there was a pretty funny fellow down there, big, wide-built guy, used to be a state policeman. Samuel R. Judge was his name. Samuel R. Judge. Samuel Judge pulled over a guy on I-95 one Sunday morning. And the guy was driving up at about, you know, around 85 or 90 miles an hour. And so he pulled him over. And this man said to him, he said, I'm surprised you pulled me over down here in the Bible Belt. I figured you'd be in church doing the Lord's work. He said, I am doing the Lord's work. The scripture says, go out in the highways and hedges and compel them to come in. And I'm compelling you to come into the justice of the peace. Now, the reason I tell you that story about Samuel, our judge, is the reason I tell you that is he heard Mr. Culliver getting on me, and he called me the preacher. He said, now, Mr. Culliver, you quit getting on the preacher. He works harder than anybody here. He's here first and he leaves last. Leave him alone. But thank you, Lord. Samuel R. Judge. Okay. Think about that. Only one in four employees give their best. Think about how much time is stolen. How many men here work in the trades? You're in the trade skill. Plumbers, electricians. Oh, yeah. This is salt of the earth. I'm telling you guys, most of what we do, people can get along without us, but you can't get along without them. You cannot. You get the water leaking, you get the electricity going, you get your heating and air out, you're going to call on those guys. You beg them. The rest of us, you'd probably put up a sign, keep out. Hey, but those tradesmen are welcome. They're the salt of the earth. And it's interesting about our profession. My mother was raised in Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina. At age 12, she went to work in the cotton mill 12 hours a day, age 12. She was born on the day the Wright brothers flew at Kitty Hawk. I always told my mom she came flying into the world, December 17th, 1903, and worked 12 hours a day. Things really changed, haven't they? Thank God for some child labor laws. We've gone so far to the other extreme. Boy, you don't ever touch a kid. You know, a 14-year-old boy is strong as a brute, and he's not supposed to work. He's supposed to have thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars saved up so they can go to college and all that. No, he probably need to put a boot in his rear end so he'll learn he's got to work. You know, you don't need to spoil him. I had a brother that made several millions of dollars, and you know what? When his son went off to college, he drove an old jalopy. Because my brother had sense enough to know if you spoil them, they'll be sorry for life. They'll think they deserve something. So, at any rate, I just wanted you all to know, I took newspapers, worked in the supermarket, worked in Haynes, P.H. Haynes Knitting Mill. I worked in Marita Bakery. It's hot in there. I did bookkeeping for old Dr. Stevens at Piedmont Bible College. I worked in an SO service station. I went through the management training program at Roadway Express. I was a sales rep and marketing assistant for Humble Oil. I was assistant pastor, Christian school principal, 40 years as a pastor, president of a small Bible college, and the past 7 years, professor of practical theology at Shepherd Seminary. I just want you to know, I've been in there where the job is easy, where it's hard, where it's dirty, but I just wanted you to know I can identify with you because I got my fanny kicked out of the bed early in the morning. It was a newspaper, you know how that is. And I just want you to know, I can relate to it. I feel so at home here because this is the kind of, you're the kind of people that I grew up around that made up our church. And my dad was a pastor, was known of the church of the common people. They could have put that as the name of the church out there. It was a common people. We didn't have a fancy den in the whole place. I can tell you that. So we're going to talk about God's plan for work. Now, last night I got nervous because Cliff got in this passage in Genesis 1 and talked about being made in the image of God. And then, of course, we find in Genesis chapter 1 that right after he said, let us make man in our image, in verse 26, and let them have dominion. You could just sit down right there and have a strike on that word. Let them have dominion. Rule, authority of, management of. Now think about it. Everything in our world today, on almost every day in the news, there's something comes that opposes that. It opposes that. It's this radical environmentalism. We're to have dominion over the earth. Now we're supposed to be bowing down to the earth. Al Gore, hug a tree, kiss a globe. You know what I'm saying? We're supposed to be doing the opposite. Dominion, the rule over the earth. Now we become servants. You know what that is? That's Hinduism. That's pantheism. That's the worship of nature. That's Mayaism, ecocentrism, whatever you want to call it. When it said, let man have dominion over this, well, now you can't even move a snail, daughter, even if it means trillions of dollars to the economy. Over here in Maryland, they're letting these big homes wash off in the water because there's some kind of bug that's, and they don't want to disturb the bug. You know what? I would love to get hold of one of those bugs. I was sick of dynamite under that bug. Listen, my daughter worked for the DNR in the state of Michigan, and the PhDs walked around and told her, you're not even supposed to kill a mosquito when he bites you. My brother said, you know, you ought to give everybody a pat on the back when he does a good job, and that's what I do to mosquitoes. You know, think about it. Here we are. Have dominion. Have rule over. This is man. God's assignment for man. And by the way, flashing lights right now, flashing red light. I want you to remember that this passage comes before the fall. So work started before the fall. You see, now that changes the meaning of work, because I'll show you in a few moments what we're talking about there. You know, and it's reiterated in verse 28. He said, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. That Malay filled the earth, that was repeated to Noah. When they came off that ark, they decided, we ain't going to do it. You know, they put their fist in God's face and said, we're not going to do it. So they said, we're going to build us a tower to reach to heaven. They weren't going to fill the earth. God divided their tongues. This guy started speaking in some, you know, this Arabic that you hear all the time on television. I think that's what a crowd of those people were speaking over there in the Tower of Babel. But God had a way to break that up. They wanted a one world government. One world government. God broke it up. You know what? They're rushing to one world government today, and guess who's going to break that up? God's going to break it up, because he's going to put the Antichrist and the beast in the lake of fire that burns forever and ever. He's going to break up that world government. It's coming. It is coming. And it's coming quickly. Our world is changing so fast it almost thinks the earth's moving under your feet. So here we have the incredible thing of God giving us. Think about this. The word vocation comes from a Latin term, vocatio. It was the idea that every legitimate kind of work was indeed an act of service, a calling from God, utilizing one's God-given skills and talents. And the fact that God himself was active, and Cliff brought that out so wonderfully last night about God didn't just create the world and go off, you know. And that's deism. That Thomas Jefferson, Franklin, and those men believed in deism, this impersonal God who wound the universe up and then threw it out there and went on a vacation. That's not God. God himself, as he mentioned, is involved in procreation. So, but the word vocation, it was used as a legitimate term for every social function. It came from God. Martin Luther said it this way: all our work in the field, in the garden, in the city, in the home, in the government, these are the mask of God behind which he is hidden and does all things. In other words, he's using us as his hands and as his feet and as his mind to do what he wants us to do. John Calvin in the 1500s said that the workplace was considered a place of worship. You know, that struck me so much. I went back to the motel last night, and I asked the young man, I said, could I ask you a question that no one has ever asked you before? He said, yeah. I said, do you ever consider your work as a place of worship of God? No, I didn't give him the gospel. I didn't give him the Roman road. I just thought, I'm going to break up that soil a little bit. I was too tired. If I'd have witnessed to him, I'd have been as backslidden as a hoot owl. And if any of you all knew old Dr. Bob Jones, I heard him say one time back years ago at the university, He said, somebody asked me when I'm sitting in the airport waiting for the next plane, do I witness to other people? He said, no, I'm in a bad mood. And he said, I found out you can't even go to heaven without going through Atlanta these days. And he said, I'm mad every time I go down there, so I'm not going to witness because I'm in a foul mood. Well, I was tired last night, but I can't wait. If I see that guy this afternoon, I'm going to ask him if he thought on it. It'd be interesting to put in your search on the Google would be work as worship. I didn't do that, but I wonder what that would bring up. Try that. You could handle that. You can do a better job, far better than I can. You're a smart man. Everything I get comes the hard way. You know, my pastor is Stephen Davey, and he is an incredible, wonderful, a godly man who is a fantastic Bible teacher. And I've got some quotes from his book that's coming out next week. I got it hot off the press. My wife is his editor, so I got a little advance. But this is what he said in his Titus commentary. The reformers were actually wrestling with the concept of a sacred calling away from the clergy alone and giving it equally to the tradesman, the mother, the milkmaid, where it belonged. Their sermons and writings pointed out that every Christian, whether a student, a teacher, an artist, a housewife, or farmer, has a sacred calling from God. That's nobility. That's dignity. That's worth. That's treasure. There's a man that I don't follow in all of his theology, but he is brilliant, R.J. Rushdoony, Rufus John Rushdoony. He led the Dominion movement greatly in America. He had a law degree, philosophy, history, theology, very brilliant. His book on the commandments called the Institutes of Biblical Law, they're classic, nothing like it in print anywhere. But Rushdoony said work was a positive virtue to the Puritan. Labor was a form of worship and was to be encouraged. Every man was a steward and responsible for the particular talent or talents which God gave them. When I went through the management program at Roadway Express, that's a rough business if you haven't been there. It's a rough business. Did you know the union contract was so strict that unless they took a picture of a man sleeping in a trailer, there's no way they could punish him for not doing his work. Had to catch him take a picture of it. Did you know that when we, 100 million pounds of freight would come across that dock on a weekend at a break bulk plant in Winston-Salem? Do you know that in the switching of those tractors out there in the yard, if the contract didn't call for it, they couldn't use the men who worked over there in the switching station to come over and move a truck when you've got the hundreds of thousands of freight to move out? No, it's not my contract. Too bad. Y'all supposed to hire somebody else. Don't help the company. Company is your enemy. Supervisor's bad. He's my enemy. The company is my enemy. That's a wrong mindset, brother. Now, there was a place for union that took my mother out of the 12-hour workday. There was a place for that. But whenever you undermine the employer that God has put there, you're committing a sin. It's not right. It's not right. Now, the right view of labor, when God said, be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth, and subdue it, Rushdoony said God appointed man as a vice regent. The Christian view is that labor is not a curse, but a blessing. Filling man's hours usefully and turning to service energies that would otherwise be wasted in idleness and mischief. Slothfulness is considered sin. Now, if anybody here today, God bless you, I'll give you $20 or $30 out of my wallet if you can tell me when I'm supposed to retire. I don't know. Anybody help me yet? I don't know. I got my brother on the phone, called me. He said, when are you going to quit working? I said, shut up. Shut your mouth. I don't know when that'll happen. I know one thing, when they don't sign the contract, you won't be there any longer. When is that going to happen? I don't know, Cal. I don't know what to do. That guy gave up one of the biggest jobs. He probably had a job that's bigger than all of us put together running all those Walmarts. Money's still up here. I still got it waiting for you. You'd help me out. I don't know. I'm 75 years old and I still smooch my wife too. So don't act pious around me. There's a lot to be done. A lot to be done. The right view of labor. The Christian view is not a curse but a blessing. Man fills his hours with things that are meaningful. And remember that the duties of dominion and work were started before the fall. They're not a part of sin. Work is not a part of the sin that was brought on by man's disobedience. And all of us in this room have memorized Romans 5, 12, 14, right? By one man sin entered the world, death by sin. And so death passed upon all men because all sin, even over those that are not sinned after the likeness of Adam's transgression. And death passed. Little children, little babies died. They didn't even yet have a chance to express the sin will, but they still died because God had pronounced that physical death. Literally, they say the Hebrew means in Genesis, when God pronounced death, it's dying thou shalt die. He didn't die immediately when he sinned. Dying thou shalt die. Now, it's the harshness of labor was a result of Adam's disobedience. The harshness of it. The curse of the fall made labor more difficult. For God said, cursed is the ground for your sake, in toil you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Now, wait a minute. What does that do for the guy that's not working on the farm? God is showing us when he created the economy, this is the creation of the economy. You know, I was an economics major. I don't know anything about it. It's been a long time ago. But God did create the economy. And he said, you're a toil, you'll eat it. What does that do about the guy behind the desk that punches a computer? Does that mean him too? I think what God is saying, work will be more difficult. Whether it's the literal agricultural, agrarian lifestyle or it's something else, it's going to be more difficult. And the carrying out of dominion is a strenuous and taxing thing. It can be extremely taxing. There are men who would literally lose their mind if they had to sit at a desk all day. There are other men that God has made them to where they will study hour after hour and never seem to be tired of it. And they produce books and writings and all. But God made us separate. And we don't have to have envy toward anyone. You know, I had my mindset. When I was 15, 16 years old, even from the time I can remember, I played Little League ball, Babe Ruth, Pony League, American Legion baseball. And the high school coach came up to me and put his arm on my shoulder one night at Market Garden down there in Danville. He said, you'll be pitching first string for high school next year. God said, no, he won't. That very night, I threw my arm away. Could never pitch again. Never. That was it. It's over. God said, you think you're going somewhere? You think you're going to choose your way, you know? You know how a kid loves sports and everything. You don't want to think about work. And if somebody had said to me, you're going to be a preacher, I'd just say, put up your dukes. And I'd give him a good old pop. I did not want to be a preacher. That was the last thing I wanted to do. I hated anybody to say that. Didn't want to hear it. But what does God's work include? Part of that work is us taking care of our family. And, you know, I got to thinking about it when I left Michigan. When I was 68 years old, when I moved to North Carolina, I was still going up on the roof and cleaning the gutters. And the devil planted a cottonwood tree. The devil, that's his tree. The cottonwood tree is right by my house. I hated that thing. I mean, I had more vain words about that cotton tree. That cottonwood tree would drive you crazy. The gnarly, sticky. Do you know on my lawn in June, you would vow it had been snowing because all that white stuff's all over my grass. And I go out there and I fertilize and I weed and I do all this. I even brush up all the clippings. And then comes the snow in June. And I hated that stuff. And to get clean my roof, it took 2 hours sometimes just to get the gooey junk off of it. I hated it. But you know what? I took tremendous pride in saying I owe it to God and my neighbors to keep up this property. I owe it to God and my neighbors. I used to think, Pastor, as a young pastor, I thought, man, I've got to go out, I've got to go beat on doors, I've got to do this. And that can be important. I don't think anybody can prove that you have to knock on doors to witness to be spiritual. I don't believe anybody can prove that. But that's the way the old line fundamentalist used to teach it. And don't look at me like a cow staring at a new gate. You know what I'm talking about. You know exactly what I'm talking about. That's the way it was. Bless God, you got to do this. You know, and I got to thinking, what do we do about our neighbors? And so I started cutting grass for a single mother across the street. And I plowed her snow, and I cut her grass for several years. And when my neighbors had trouble, I started doing that. And I thought, I want to have a ministry right here in my neighborhood. And I don't know all the payday of that. Where's the fruit? I don't know. The right view of your work will transform everything you do. Listen to Paul's words in Colossians 3:23. Whatever you do, work it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for human masters. Since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward, it is the Lord Christ you are serving. And I know you can say, here, there's always an objection. What if you got a really terrible supervisor? Many people have a terrible supervisor. And the scripture addresses that. 1 Peter chapter 2 says, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human institution. And he says, in doing this, in such doing, is the will of God that by doing right you may silence the ignorance of foolish men. Verse 18, 1 Peter 2. Servants, be submissive to your masters with all respect, not only to those who are good and gentle, but also to those who are unreasonable. A boss you can't please. Now, I can tell you one of two things. You either trust it to God and say, God's my ultimate supervisor. He's just an intermediary. And I'm not even, he can be. And I had a supervisor when I was a seminary student and I was working in the OK Tire and Rubber Company. And this guy took a disliking for me and he did everything he could to make me mad. And I said, God, I'm not going to get mad. He cursed worse than anybody I've ever heard. It just killed me to hear that. You know what? I said, God, you're my supervisor. He thinks he's my supervisor. And I'm going to do what he says, but you're my supervisor. So I got the best supervisor in the whole world, right? Isn't the truth? And if we have that view, isn't it true? It worked. He's almost got the $40. He raised his hand. Here's an illustration. In the Middle Ages, they were building decades that would take to build the great cathedrals. And one day, there were three workers out there, and a man went up to him and said, what are you doing? One of them said, well, I'm cutting stones. And the other one said, I'm making a living as a stonemason. You all know what the third one said, don't you? I'm building a great cathedral. That's powerful. All the one man could see is the stones. It's like a sculptor who can see the figure in the rock before he does it. And this one man says, I'm building a great cathedral. Isn't that wonderful? I'm serving a mighty God. And I'll tell you, if you're a man that you ought to be, and if you're not, I'd like to kick your fanny, because if you're a man that you ought to be, you ought to be willing, if need be, to get money to feed your family, to shovel manure. I volunteered to do it one time. To feed my family, I'll fight you. I'll cross the water, I'll cross a stream, I'll cross a desert, go across a mountain. I want to take care of my family. And I'll tell you one thing. I think there's a time when sometime a welfare help and a hand up is great. But I'll tell you one thing. There's something inside a man that believes in God. He doesn't want somebody to give him his way. He wants to earn his way. He wants to be honorable. He wants to have it. And there's great reward in the doing of it. Now, what about if your wages aren't fair? The Bible talks about that too. You got a bad supervisor and you got poor wages that you don't think are just. Here's the answer. It comes from Jesus, not from me. The workers... Jesus gave the parable of the workers. The first group went out early in the morning. The second group went out at 9. The third and fourth group went between noon and 3 o'clock. Another group at 5 o'clock. But Matthew 20, verse 9 says, the workers who were hired at 5 in the afternoon and came and received a denarius. So when those came in who were hired first, they expected to receive more, but each one of them received a denarius, which was typically a day's wage. When they received it, they began to grumble against the landowner. These who were hired last worked only 1 hour, they said, and you have made them equal to us and have borne the burden of the work and the heat of the day. Listen, I pastored in Union Country in the north, and work slowdown is a way of life. It's a way of life. It gives more jobs and more union contracts. I hate to say that, but I'm going to tell you that's the way it is. Now, I want to tell you why your car costs so much. Anybody ever tell you why? I can tell you why. I lived in General Motors town. General Motors. They had a man on the line, and he's working. And I think most of the Lansing workers were pretty good workers, actually. But then there was a young retiree at age 45 to 65 who's also drawing pretty heavy pay. Cadillac benefits. And then there's another retiree, the 65 to 85 guy. That's three men doing one job, right? There was a fourth one. You know what the fourth one was? Anybody tell me? There were four men being paid. You know who the fourth one was? They paid them to sit in the break room because the contract called for it. And when you average out about $50 or $60 an hour times four for the work of a car being built, that's why your car cost you so much. You think that's a joke. I can tell you it's real. It's real. All these people that hate Walmart, you know what? I'd just like to say, I hope Walmart's bulldog bites you. Why do I hate Walmart? I don't hate companies. It's the wrong thing. It's the wrong thing to do. Well, Jesus said, I'm not being unfair to you, friend. This is what he put as a steward. He said, didn't you agree to work for a denarius? Take your pay and go. I want to give the one who has hired last the same as I give you. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my own money? Or are you envious because I am generous? So the last will be first, the first will be last. It's none of my business what somebody else makes. I have five grown children from age 54 down to 31. I've never asked one of my children, how much money do you make? I knew my brother was making big money. I never once asked him how much money he made. You know what he said about money and being successful? The only thing I ever heard him say, and I can hear him now, Lord's been good to me. That's all he'd say. He never said, I got this. I made this much money. He said, Lord's been good to me. We had to lay him to rest last year. I loved him to death. I loved him to death. But I can hear him now. And he was much more successful. He's three or four of us went on to college and graduate degrees and all that. He was in the Navy and he finished high school. He made more money than all of us put together. That's funny. God getting laugh out of it. God's up there saying, goody, 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 goody. I got me a man up there. Isn't that fantastic? This is super. Somebody said, well, I wish I had a college education. No, you don't. No, you don't. It's not what it's cracked up to be. I've never been too impressed with it. What's the wrong view of labor? Aristotle envisioned a society built upon labor-saving machines. All the non-Christian conceptions of labor, all of them, of a better life included the elimination or reduction of labor. Labor was viewed as an affliction, a drudgery, and a crushing burden. The pains of toil came to the human race not by accident and external circumstances or some fatal accident, which should never have happened. Even Solomon, in that great book of Ecclesiastes, where he is allowed to give the humanistic view, said, I looked on all the work of my hands that I had done and labored I had toiled, and indeed all was vanity and grasping for the wind. Therefore, I hated life because the work that was done under the sun was distressing to me. Then I hated all my labor which I had toiled under the sun because I must leave it to the man who will come after me. My wife's second husband will get my insurance money and my wife. Right? Yours will too. You know, her second husband's going to get it, buddy. It's going to be yours. You can't take it with you. Still want that $40. You can't take it with you. What are you going to do with it? Marx, you know what Karl Marx said about labor? Communist Manifesto. Masses of laborers crowded into the factory, organized like soldiers. Not only are they slaves of the bourgeois class and the bourgeois state, they are daily and hourly enslaved by the machine, the overseer, the manufacturer himself. The theory of the communist can be summed up in one word, the abolition of private property. Do you know something? God proved private property when he said, thou shalt not steal. Well, you couldn't steal something if it didn't belong to anybody, could you? Thou shalt not steal is the proof that God ordains private property. You know, in economics, we learn of Adam Smith. In capitalism, it's free enterprise, private property, individual initiative, and marketplace competition. That's what drives an economy. But the communists, oh no. And along with abolishing private property, abolition of the family. Marx called the family the bourgeois claptrap about the family and education, about the hallowed correlation of parent and child. And ultimately, they want to abolish all nationality, all nationhood, and all countries. Communism abolishes eternal truths. It abolishes all religion and morality. Radical environmentalism teaches that the earth is supreme. They call it geocentrism or ecocentrism. Love of Mother Earth has led to controversies in the great Northwest timber industry, the wetlands country of the Great Plains, the oil reserves in Alaska. Radical environmentalism is nothing less than Hinduism dressed in Western clothes. Go ahead, if you want to be one of them, hug a tree and kiss a globe. Kiss Al Gore too. What's the humanistic view? Pastor Davey wrote, today the motive for work has been reduced to a paycheck and the incentive for work has become the weekend. The ultimate goal for work is retirement and the average American dream is to be done with work, never having to serve anyone ever. When I would find 45, 47-year-old men that worked their years at General Motors, and all they had, their whole ambition was to retire early, and a 47-year-old man, I think it's an outright shame and sin and disgrace that that's what somebody would aspire to. What would you be worth? Your wife could hardly put up with you if you stayed home all day. Let me tell you that now. If you don't believe it, ask some of these retired guys. There's nothing wrong with retirement at the proper place. May I also say that? That's fine, too. It better be because some of us over here with gray hair get a lot closer to it than others. Okay. I'm going to wrap it up very quickly. The blessing of labor is that it's godlike. It's godlike. Genesis 2, when God completed his work, which he had done, he rested from all his work that he had done. God worked. God the worker. All who labor find an ideal model in God. He's not an inactive deity. Jesus tirelessly labored. Watch Jesus in the carpenter shop. And you see something. There are two things. You see the toil of divinity. It's God working. But you also see the divinity of toil. It's not just the toil of divinity. It's the divinity of toil. It's godlike. It's worship. It's worship. Washing the dishes. You know, one of the greatest treats I had when my wife had 10 cancer surgeries, and I had to do, she couldn't do anything. And I had to wash all the dishes and do everything. I found it such a blessing. I would look at it from the outside, I would think, that's terrible. But you know what? It drew us closer. We prayed together more. We listened to godly music. When I would spend an hour at each time addressing those wounds twice a day, an hour at a time, it was all a blessing. It was a blessing. It was a blessing. You don't like to wash dishes, do you? No. But you know what? When I was doing, I'm thinking, you know, I could be a widower. I could be all alone. As ugly as I was, you'd be happy to have a woman to have you. So, when you think about it, this whole thing, the sustaining power of God, to be God-like is to be a laborer. And I'll give you two or three quickly. Why toil? What is the duty of work? Why that duty? For the soil's sake. Your lawn looks pretty good out there, but I'll tell you what, you leave it out there about a year and you come back and tell me how good it looks. God wants that to be worked. There's a place for the wildlands and the wetlands. Of course, the wetlands get more attention than anything. If I'd had any ambition in life, I'd like to be a wetland because the government would tell everybody, leave me alone, whatever you do. But you want to be a wetland. But it's necessary for life. Work's necessary for life. And then, the scripture said, if a man will not work, neither will he eat. Well, there goes a welfare program. 90% of it, 95. Where laziness is a way of life, there's poverty and corruption and sin of every sort. And work provides for our families. Blessed is everyone who fears the Lord. In Psalm 128, I love this. And walks in his ways. When you eat the labor of your hands, you'll be happy and it'll be well with you. And your wife will be like a fruitful vine in the very heart of your home. And your children like olive plants around your table. Behold, thus shall the man be blessed who fears the Lord. Working takes care of the family. It does. You know what I do? The young men come into seminary and they come in my office because have to do the mentoring interviews and all that. And after I tell them everything, I kind of keep this picture out of sight. And then when I'm finished and I'm going to pray for them and everything, I'll stand up and I'll go up and got it up on top of a big cap. I pull it down and it's a picture of my five children and their mates and my grandchildren. And I said, I want to tell you something. This is my most important ministry. Much more important than any church I pastor. Because, you know, according to Psalm 78, if you're willing to wait 200 years, your greatest evangelistic ministry. You know what? 200 years from now, I believe there'll be a couple hundred people in the kingdom that's got some of my blood and my DNA in them. I really believe that. Because they'll pass on the faith. And I want to tell you something, Pastor. I don't care how good we are. I've heard people brag about witnessing and all that. I don't even believe anybody's ever won a soul. That's the Holy Spirit's work in the first place. But I will tell you one thing. You won't ever in your lifetime win as many people to Christ as you will if you have a good-sized family and wait 200 years. Because they set their hope, the ones that are yet to be born will set their hope in God. Isn't that what it says in Psalm 78? That's called exponential generational evangelism. You can't beat it. You can't beat it. It puts God's blessing upon us, the blessing of sleep for the work. It gives godly notoriety. A man who excels in his work, he'll stand before a king. Socialism's goal is to free man from work, which is to free him from God. God's plan for man to rule the earth requires work, which brings great blessing. So I'm going to give you some practical hints as I close. Appreciate your job and consider it a ministry. Serve our employers as a service unto the Lord. I don't care whether he's likable or not, or she, it doesn't matter. Take our jobs as an assignment from God. Labor honestly and earnestly. Do not undermine your employer's authority. Pass on the work ethic to our children. Daily thank God for the ability to work. Honor the Lord's Day. Pass the rich heritage on to your children. God's plan for work, the right view of labor, the wrong view of labor. We need to keep all that into consideration. And I'll just give you this little testimony. Champion figure skater Paul Wiley is a cum laude graduate of Harvard. And a born-again Christian. His mother always wanted him to be a minister, but he decided to study law. He believes he does not possess the gift required for pastoral ministry, but he insists, and rightly so, that whether he's performing on the ice or reading in the library of Harvard Law School, he can serve his Savior, Jesus Christ. He said, "I think every Christian is called to be a minister in his place of work. So I try to be a minister wherever I am. When people come up to me and ask me questions, I tell them the truth. Whether we are figure skaters, law students, homemakers, mechanics, nurses, bankers, or have some other job, we can serve Jesus Christ. The New Testament doesn't assign the task of ministry only to those who are officially recognized as pastors. Your work's important, men, and thank you for the work you do. There's not a pastor, and I'm sure Pastor Wells would say the same thing, there's not a pastor that doesn't appreciate the many labors that the men do, which in turn provides financially and the needs of the church and missions. We appreciate you. We thank God for you, and there wouldn't be a church without you. And so I want to thank you, and thank you for the privilege of being here. God bless you all. Thank you, brothers. Thank you."